You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, May 20th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Matt Rothschild from the Progressive on the release of the Center for Media and Democracy's year-long investigation, Dissent or Terror, how the nation's counterterrorism apparatus in partnership with corporate America turned on Occupy Wall Street, a story of how these fusion centers, I think it's 75 of them across the country, where the rubber meets the road with the Department of Homeland Security, deals with local issues, turns out to be more just an extension of corporate intel than it is in protecting us from terrorism. Surprise, surprise. Also on the program today, more on that Jonathan Carl, the ABC reporter who apparently passed on faulty information given to him from Republican operatives, why Jonathan Carl was the perfect guy to do so, and why he has, though we've been told many times before, reporters, real reporters, burn their anonymous sources who lie to them. Well, they never do. Also, Fast Track winds its way through the Senate. This will allow for the passage with very little debate over trade deals like the TPP. Important to keep your eye on it because this is the only way to stop those things. And we've talked in the past about how, from what little we know of the secret negotiations, how bad that TPP will be. Also, a wonderful, heartwarming story about how our future generations the future generation of leaders in this country are being taught that science is bunk and that dinosaurs lived amongst us, all within the 6 or 7, to be fair, maybe 9,000 years that the planet has existed. Yes. And also a sort of stunning to hear this on NPR. But Donald Rumsfeld is actually questioned in a way that I don't know that I've ever heard him questioned in the past. Maybe just a slight indication of how these war criminals will be treated in the future. Highly unlikely. And this story, folks, as you know, on this program, we do not waste time in speculating about the horse race for an election that won't take place for another 3 years. However, interesting to note that as Hillary Clinton begins to assemble the pieces for her, I don't want to say inevitable, but likely run in 2016, this piece comes out in the Washington Post. It's a long piece. I am not interested enough in this topic to read past the first paragraph. However, the first paragraph was enough to make me feel good. It begins, Harold Wolfson, the 2008 communications director for Hillary Rodham Clinton, has said he will not return for a 2016 presidential campaign. Wolfson, of course, has been working for Mayor Bloomberg and has probably found that he will have wealthier pastures in which to continue to drop his poop.
I did read this article, and the owner of Nobu in New York, which is a really nice Japanese restaurant.
Nobu.
But he said Howard Wolfenson put my kids through college, which how many times he comes.
Yes. So well, I'm sure he will do more of that. Neither, for that matter, will Neera Tanden, the campaign's policy director. Ditto for Mark Penn, the chief strategist. And Patty Soilus Doyle, the embattled campaign manager. So, in other words, folks, and particularly the Mark Penn thing makes puts a smile on my face, because regardless of what you think about Hillary Clinton, just the idea that these people will not be involved in politics at this level anymore, it has got to bring a smile to your face. You'll remember Mark Penn, while he was running the Clinton campaign, also took a trip to, what was it, to South America or Latin America to do some, he had another lobbying. Other lobbying clients who were up to no good. And just to see Mark Penn go away is enough to bring a smile to my face. And at that point, I didn't need to read any more of the article. Didn't care. That brought a smile to my face. And you've got to get happiness where you can these days. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Matt Rothschild on this more FOIA information on how these fusion centers work. And apparently what they really fuse is our tax dollars going to spying on people who are not threats but have some value to those people in to corporations. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone from the progressive Matt Rothschild, talking about the this report that has been put out by DBA Press and the Center for Media Democracy, Dissent or Terror, How the Nation's Counterterrorism Apparatus in Partnership with Corporate America Turned on Occupy Wall Street. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Sam.
All right, so let's talk about this. I mean, I think the important thing, the thing that I find so intriguing about this story, because we have known that there was extensive spying on the Occupy movement by the so-called fusion centers, and this report is coming on the heels of reporting by Michael Isikoff for NBC News. That the Boston Police Counterintelligence Unit, which is funded with millions of dollars of Homeland Security grants and works within one of these fusion centers, spent an inordinate amount of time tracking Occupy Boston at the very time the FBI was getting warnings about one of the Boston Marathon bombers. And it's this story does not make a direct say there's an explicit cause and effect here, that all the time that the Boston counterterror was involved in examining Occupy basically led them to basically drop the ball when it came to this Boston Marathon bomber. But there's certainly an implication there. And this story sort of, though not necessarily related, sort of has the same theme, yes?
Yeah, well, it certainly raises the question as to why Homeland Security, the fusion centers, local law enforcement were so obsessed with Occupy activists who were simply exercising their First Amendment rights, and why they weren't more interested in the actual leads from real live terrorists who were threatening the United States. I mean, I think it's outrageous the amount of money and time and resources spent on spying on, infiltrating, tracking on social media websites and Facebook and things like that that Homeland Security and these fusion center officers were doing, instead of going after people who actually wanted to do us harm. And that's, you know, part of what's coming out of these documents from the Center for Media and Democracy and DBA Press, and also the Progressive Magazine. We have a cover story on this very same subject. You know, it's really skewed priorities on the part of law enforcement and Homeland Security, for one thing, to leave the Tsarnaevs alone and track the Occupy terrorists. That's crazy. And the other thing is, in connection with this IRS scandal, we have all the right-wingers complaining about this IRS scandal. To me, this is a bigger scandal than that, and it deals with the same thing: political meddling and governmental overreach.
Right, and I would say that the analogy is, I mean, it's so much worse. The analogy almost doesn't work. I mean, here you have a situation where you have groups that are supposedly applying for, groups that are applying for a special exempt status from the IRS, and the IRS is basically very sloppily trying to determine who is and who is not eligible for that status. And in this instance, you actually have a case of targeting based upon political speech. So let's talk about what it is that you focused on from this report. It's obviously very expansive. I imagine you guys are still going through this, but what is it that you focused on in particular?
Well, I focused on Arizona, and one city in particular, Phoenix, just because I think it's a microcosm of what law enforcement and Homeland Security and these fusion centers are doing all over the country. So what they did there is they treated Occupy activists as potential terrorists. They had their terrorism liaison officers at the fusion center in Arizona. They were obsessed with the Occupy protesters. So they infiltrated the Occupy meetings. They sent someone in undercover with a fake name. They tracked the Occupy activists online. They even kept an eye on the Reverend Jesse Jackson when he was visiting an Occupy protest in Phoenix and recorded his movements and when he was going to be where. And then they monitored protests against ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And on top of all that, they were working hand in glove with some of the very financial institutions that ALEC and Occupy were protesting against, warning them, the banks when the protests are supposed to happen, where they're supposed to happen, how they could work together with the security officers from, even J.P. Morgan Chase when Jamie Dimon was coming to Phoenix. The Phoenix law enforcement was working with them. I mean, it's kind of ludicrous that they're working with financial institutions and warning them about protests when, you know, people should be able to protest, and the protesters are protesting against these financial interests that collapsed Wall Street and all that. So that's a whole nother angle on this, why they work hand in glove with big business, and it relates to another story that I've been working on over the last few years, which is the FBI working hand in glove with some 50,000 business people around the country in a group called InfraGuard in every state of the union. You've got the FBI working with the private sector and telling people that, you know, if they see anything suspicious, please give them a holler, or if they have a problem with an employee, please give the FBI a holler. So there's all sorts of things that this new study coming out of the Center for Media and Democracy relate to. But the main thing is, this is a ridiculous use of resources. It used to be illegal before the Patriot Act for law enforcement to go undercover at a protest meeting unless there was some predicate of illegality going on, which there wasn't in Phoenix and there hasn't been in other places. So, you know, the Occupy movement was a threat against corporate America, and so you had law enforcement and Homeland Security responding as though it was a threat to the security of the United States.
So let's now, how granular, because this is important, because ultimately I want to know exactly what type of information is being shared here, because this is, you know, this is so disturbing on multiple fronts. I mean, we've been aware of the spying that took place on Occupy for some time. I mean, this really and this new information basically tells us just how granular that spying was. But what's also disturbing, I think, and really what's amazing is that this is basically our tax dollars funding the corporate intel of these major corporations. And one has to wonder at one point, you know, where does it end? And why are we spending all this money? So let's just start with just how granular the spying went, because it went down to the level of facial recognition being used on people's Facebook pictures.
Yeah, I mean, that's about as granular as you can get. So there was one police officer at the Phoenix Police Department who was also part of the Fusion Center there, whose primary responsibility for months and months was to follow Occupy activists on the web and on Facebook. And then she would collect reams of material, the names, addresses, social security numbers, physical descriptions, driver's licenses, and home addresses of citizens in the Phoenix area who'd been arrested, issued citations, or, and this is the even worse part, or even just given warnings by police in connection with their involvement with Occupy Phoenix. If you're just given a warning by police, you're in the system. And also, she had some citizen call up and say there's this Occupy activist who's making vague threats, and the person was talking about that Occupy activist said, well, this person is also smoking dope, and I can get you a picture of this person. And so the person sent a picture to this undercover, not to this person who was tracking the Occupy activist. And then the police officer said, well, we can use facial recognition and run this photo through our system and find out who this person was. So that's one bit of granular, scary stuff. Another one was, and this is even scarier to me, a citizen in Phoenix complained in an email to the Phoenix Police Department that they're spending too much time paying attention and tracking and meddling with Occupy Phoenix, and they should leave them alone. Well, within minutes of getting that email in the Phoenix Police Department, they did a search on who this guy was and why he's bothering them. Bothering them, he was simply telling them to leave people alone and let them exercise their First Amendment rights.
And so now, so these fusion centers and this officer from the Phoenix Police Department, they're collecting all this data on people who are, they believe, are going to protest in the future. They believe have protested in the past. They're gathering all this information on protesters, on people who are going out exercising their First Amendment right, and then they're basically passing this on to private corporations.
Exactly. So if there was a protest at, you know, one of the main banks in downtown Phoenix, and they would contact the security officers for that Phoenix bank and say there's a protest coming at such and such a time, and they even put together a face list of potential activists who would be there, people whose names and pictures they'd collected in their system and shared those names and faces with the people doing security for the bank.
And so, I mean, this is really stunning now. So these banks, these corporations in Phoenix, they have how much information is shared? In other words, they have the names of these people? They have the pictures of these people? Do they have their social security numbers? Do they have their backgrounds? I mean, do they know who their parents are? I mean, how much information do these banks or these corporations have?
Well, according to the documents from the Center for Media and Democracy and DBA Press, they were sharing reams of information with private companies, including, yes, names, faces. I believe they shared even other material and specifics on each individual that they thought might be appearing at the protest in Phoenix at such and such a bank. And so that gives you a sense as to how close we have law enforcement and Homeland Security working with the private sector here to get in the way of people's exercise of their First Amendment rights.
And frankly, once this information is in the hands of these corporations, we have no idea how they're going to use this information.
Right. You know, they could hire private detectives. They could do all sorts of actions, private actions to harass Occupy activists. And, you know, I remember a young Occupy activist in New York who was taking a prominent role there at the beginning, and then about a month later she called me and said, you know, she thought she was being spied on by the FBI or Homeland Security. And, you know, I didn't know what to make of it at the time, but the more I read this stuff, the more I believe it.
And so what is the statutory limits on this? I mean, is this a violation of any laws? I mean, it's one thing, particularly in this day and age, that these fusion centers, which clearly are, you know, another example of the, and I keep using this word, but of self-licking ice cream cones, where they must create threats to justify the millions of dollars that are, billions of dollars that are being poured into these centers. But what is the law in terms of what they're allowed to share with private entities?
You know, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know what the answer to that is. But I do know that a lot of the things that they're doing now, they weren't allowed to do prior to 9/11. You know, they weren't allowed to send infiltrators into these meetings. They weren't allowed to even go to public places and record the names or the descriptions of people who were protesting. But now at almost every protest I go to in the United States and here in Madison, Wisconsin, there are police there filming. You know, I was involved in a lot of the uprising in against Scott Walker, and there were, you know, the cops were filming everything. Why should the cops be filming when there's no criminal activity going on? But here we have a sense as to just how deep this goes among law enforcement across the country and how connected they are with the private sector, which is even more distressing.
And is there any, are you aware of any attempts by any legislatures, or is there any investigations into this? I mean, you know, when we contrast this with what the supposed IRS scandal, it seems to me completely is completely dwarfed by what we found here.
I totally agree. I think this is of a much bigger scale, a much bigger scandal, a much bigger affront to our political rights than this IRS flap. And yet I don't know anyone who's making a stink about it among Democratic legislators.
Talk to me about the FOIA requests. Are these limited to anything that deal with Occupy, or do we have a sense that that these fusion centers were doing the same thing with Tea Party rallies or with 9/12 rallies or rallies where people are invited to bring their guns and are bringing loaded guns? I mean, is this, in other words, you know, we know that that on Facebook there are different people who are trying to, I think it was on July 4th, have a rally where thousands of people would show up with their loaded guns in public view. Do we know if Department of Homeland Security is infiltrating these groups, if they are sharing this information with private ententities? I mean, how broad are these FOIA requests?
So the FOIA requests that were put out by DBA Press and Center for Media and Democracy were linked to Occupy and to ALEC. So they sought all documents related that had those words in there. So there weren't searches for patriot groups or NRA groups or Second Amendment groups. This was focused on Occupy and on ALEC protests. So I can't answer whether Homeland Security is doing it across the board or not, but they're certainly doing it here, and they certainly weren't paying attention in Boston when there was a real terrorist threat.
I mean, this it would be fascinating to find that out. I mean, because, you know, one, in terms of in the event that they are, it would obviously it would obviously, from a political standpoint, create a broader coalition to, that is clearly going to be needed to try and shut down part of this apparatus. And if they're not, it sort of begs the question, how do you justify choosing these people just based upon the fact that they're, I guess, anti-corporate in some respect?
Right, and that's what was happening here, and I do agree. You know, there are people on the right, especially libertarians, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, who genuinely are concerned about our civil liberties here, and I think that they are potential allies on an issue such as this, because it's outrageous how much time and energy the police are using to monitor nonviolent people exercising their First Amendment rights. They may be anti-corporate, or maybe they're pro-gun too, but so long as they're nonviolent and they're exercising their First Amendment rights, the government really has, it may have a legal right now after 9/11, but it has no moral right to be hovering over us, checking out our Facebook pages, and infiltrating, sending people undercover with false pretenses to our meetings if we're just trying to exercise what our founders enshrined in the First Amendment.
Right, and I can't imagine that even those people who passed the Patriot Act were at least touting provisions where we would be subsidizing the intel gathering of private corporations. I mean, because that to me just sounds like another total ripoff here.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're right when, you know, they're doing, you know, they're the advance team for the corporations. They're doing intel for the corporations. And that's not why, you know, we send our tax dollars to Homeland Security.
It's stunning. And what else? Is there anything else from this this report, which I know just came out today? You've obviously had a chance to look at it in advance. But I'm wondering, what else do you anticipate coming out of this report?
Well, the other interesting thing that I saw and I wrote about in this cover story in The Progressive, spying on Occupy activists, is that there actually was coordination among law enforcement agencies around the country in many big cities. So when we saw that crackdown on Occupy happen, you know, on a weekend in various cities, it wasn't a coincidence. I mean, these law enforcement agencies were planning their responses all along. And so there was this integrated effort to squash people's protests.
And what's the mechanism in which they were coordinating? I mean, it's one thing, I think, you know, police departments talking to police departments on some level, obviously you get into a gray area. It's not surprising police departments share things like tactics and things that have been effective in terms of policing in general. But I would imagine a nationwide coordination of the day that they're going to do this, or we're talking about federal dollars here, it gets increasingly problematic.
Yeah, I found it troubling, and I found it an answer to a question I had in my mind when I saw that crackdown happen, and it just didn't seem like it was possible that it could have been a coincidence, and now it appears that it wasn't a coincidence after all that there were these organized efforts to try to quash a movement of people exercising their First Amendment rights.
Who provided this coordination? In other words, was this a top-down type of situation, or was it the police departments on their own reaching out to other police departments?
I think it was the latter, but the FBI was involved with it too. So, you know, in like October 2011, I saw a document that said representatives from 13 police agencies took part in this telephone conference to plan effective strategies to deal with Occupy in future days and weeks. And, you know, there were representatives from major metropolitan police forces around the country. I don't know if the FBI instigated that teleconference or whether Homeland Security did or whether it was, you know, from Phoenix or not, but they were working together.
And do we have a sense of just how much, you know, what the distribution of resources is being used here? In other words, you know, if I don't know why in Boston we did not see more. Okay, they perceived that the warnings they got, they got multiple warnings from the Russians that went to the FBI, went to a Department of Homeland Security. For some reason, this was not picked up by, presumably it was in the Fusion Center, but the Boston police, the intel division, didn't get it. I wonder how many stories there are, if there's any way for us to tell, just, you know, look, this is an agency. These fusion centers function like any other agency. You have your priorities. You go after certain leads. You, if there was no other leads dealing or no other work to be done in Boston but for these reports about Tsarnaev, then I imagine he would have gotten a lot more scrutiny, as opposed to the fact, well, there were other things to do. We had to chase Occupy. I wonder how many, how prevalent that dynamic is across the country.
Well, I think that's a real crucial question on priorities too. I mean, and also, you know, how many times does Homeland Security or the FBI or the CIA get warnings from Russia or another country that there's a potential terrorist in our country? I bet it's not that many. I'd like to know the answer to that. So why aren't they going after those people who've got to be a higher priority than the person who's saying, you know, we are the 99% and holding a sign denouncing the 1%? I mean, if you're in law enforcement and you're trying to figure out who's really going to pose a threat to us, it's that person with the sign?
Well, you know, I think on some level, what we're seeing here is that if you perceive these, and I think, you know, to a certain extent, the story you have written and this dynamic reveals some of this. If you perceive that these bureaucrats and these law enforcement people working in these fusion centers perceive that their client are these corporations, there's a far more sort of an incentive to provide that information than information that just may be less, you know, sexy or demanded in some respects. And that is what seems to be the problematic here.
And the other thing is, if you're calling everybody a terrorist, all the Occupy protesters potential terrorists, then you can't really distinguish one really threatening terrorist, the Tsarnaev brother, from the person holding the Occupy sign. And so it's just a total blurring of distinctions and priorities.
And will you just comment briefly on you tell this story of the infiltrator, and it really, in my mind, shows the sort of the incredible sloppiness and the just the bizarre perception that police the police seem to have of the Occupy movement. And it also speaks to the point of, like, I think in a broader sense, that these fusion centers, I mean, is there any value to them in terms of our national security? Because, you know, it seems to me like almost like the NBA. It's one thing to say that, you know, and we have a CIA that has missed a lot of has had huge intelligence failures. But I also got to imagine that there are only so many people who are good at this, and that if we were to triple the size of the NBA, the quality of professional basketball playing in this country would also greatly diminish. It seems to me that what we're seeing, you know, with these fusion centers and who they sent to spy on Occupy is a perfect example of, you've got people here who don't really seem to know what they're doing, and they're just sort of playing secret spy, but don't really have a clue as to what is involved.
Yeah, well, the guy they sent undercover said he was a Mexican national and a homeless person, happened to be in great physical shape, and happened to be an undercover police officer that someone recognized from going to a coffee house in the area a couple years prior to that. But the police loved having him in there. One document that I saw said, and the guy went by the name of Saul Bosses, Saul attended an organizational meeting for the Disrupt ALEC movement last night and talked about the flyers they had and said, you know, we're going to rely on Saul to get more information for us. So it's just classic undercover stuff that was illegal before the Patriot Act, and now they can do this. But, you know, as to the larger point, I mean, the fusion centers haven't uncovered an actual terrorist threat. There was a report from the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs less than a year ago that talked about all the failings of these fusion centers. And the one of the things that bothers me about the fusion centers above all gets to the point about these private companies, because there are representatives from private companies in the fusion center. What in the world are they doing in there? Why are our taxpayers, tax-paying dollars going to support private companies when they're supposed to be going to support law enforcement. And that gets to the distorting priorities that's so much a part of this story. Cops and Homeland Security actually helping Wall Street rather than looking for real terrorist threats.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think this story can be summed up in many respects that Homeland Security is just another racket.
Yeah, I mean, it's another candy store for corporations. I mean, that's the ability of corporate, the huge companies in this country just to gobble up everything, but they've infiltrated Homeland Security, too.
Matthew Rothschild writing the story will be in the June 2013 of the issue of The Progressive. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Sam. Take care.
All right, folks, I just want to go back over the Michael Isikoff story because I somehow missed that last week. And it tells very much a similar story. And that the Boston Counterintelligence Unit, funded with millions of dollars in Homeland Security grants, was, of course, spending what appears to be its resources and its time monitoring Occupy Wall Street, tracking their Facebook pages, tracking their websites, their Twitter feeds, writing reports on the potential commercial and financial sector assets in downtown areas. I mean, this is essentially just a racket. And it's not necessarily a reflection of the people who are in these fusion centers. They're looking for a purpose. It is the same problem we have with what I have called the militarization of our police. Some people have taken issue with that. But when you dump tons of money and you make this available, people are going to try use that. And now it appears to be that at least these fusion centers are functioning as the private security firms for corporations that want to protect their brands. I mean, that's basically it. We're seeing Homeland Security money spent on the brand protection of private corporations. And I have little doubt that we see this, whether these protesters are protesting a corporate influence, whether these protesters are protesting the environmental policies of these companies, whether these protesters are protesting the foreign labor practices of these companies. There's no reason to doubt that this practice goes well beyond what Occupy was doing. And at the end of the day, this can be boiled down to simply, we are expending billions of dollars of taxpayer money to protect the brand integrity, the public relations for these corporate interests. And, you know, I think to a certain extent, there is a failure, obviously, by the mainstream media to pick up on this story. And there's a failure, in some respects, by those reporting on these stories of Occupy to broaden this out, because the story is far greater than just the implications for Occupy, which is not to diminish the implications for Occupy. But if we are hearing literally weeks of stories about the IRS using an inappropriate filtering system to determine whose applications for tax-exempt status are going to receive more scrutiny, this story blows that story out of the water. The idea that this whole notion of our security state, and it harkens back to the story of Thomas Drake and those NSA whistleblowers who were blowing the whistle not just on an invasive screening by the NSA, but also the use of technology that was a boondoggle. And it was private technology that was brought in to supplant a pre-existing government-developed technology. It's the same thing. We are seeing corporations basically just gobble up all this national security money, these national security resources, for their own purposes. It's hugely problematic. Isikoff went on to say the police monitoring of the activities of Occupy Boston came during a period after the U.S. government received the second of two warnings from the Russian government about the radical Islamic ties of the alleged Boston Marathon bomber, Tamerlan Tsarnaev. The FBI officials have insisted that the intelligence about Tsarnaev was vague and uncorroborated, and that their own assessment at the time produced no derogatory, it's in quotes, information that justified opening a full-scale investigation. But internal police documents could raise fresh questions about the role of Homeland Security-funded fusion centers like the Boston Regional Intelligence Center, or BRIC, which conducted the monitoring. Apparently they were obtained by a civil liberties group. There are 72 of these units around the country. And the executive director for Partnership for Civil Justice that obtained these documents said that they were monitoring completely lawful activities. She said the BRIC monitoring was an example of the vast expenditure of government money to collect intelligence on activities unrelated to terrorism in violation of First Amendment rights. The internal police documents about the activities of BRIC show that on September 30th, just 2 days after the second Russian warning about Tsarnaev was sent to the CIA, the police unit was focused on an upcoming Take Back Boston rally planned for the city's Dewey Square. It ended up involving 100 people. 100 to 700 people. Of course, nothing came of this. In one daily intelligence briefing dated October 21st, 2011, the Threat Management Division of Homeland Security's Federal Protective Service outlines a template for creating the daily intelligence brief for your region. Cites a list of events we want to request that officials submit for daily briefing information. Among the categories, in addition to reporting on domestic terrorist acts and significant criminal activity, is one called Peaceful Activist Demonstrations. Commissioner Davis acknowledged to House Committee that his department, which runs BRIC, was never, so it's the local police running the fusion center, was never provided any of the intelligence from the FBI and CIA that Tsarnaev had been twice flagged by the Russians as an Islamic radical with ties to underground groups in that country. I mean, if that does not make it there, what is the purpose for these fusion centers? And without a purpose, but millions of dollars in Homeland Security money, what else are they going to do? Boston police apparently had access to the database, to the classified database that would have flagged Tsarnaev. But his own officers, according to Davis, were never assigned to the task force, were never specifically alerted to the information about Tsarnaev. Okay, so in other words, you have these guys sitting in BRIC, one of these fusion centers. Instead of going through the database to see, hey, anybody in the Boston region, the New England region, who's been flagged by a foreign government, let's say, as potential terrorists. Instead of doing that, these guys were spending their time spying on, monitoring Facebook pages, Twitter activities of the Occupy movement. In other words, for them, this was a bigger target because it was just, there was more demand for information about it from the private sector. Because they're sending out their warnings to the local banks, to the local hedge funds, that these guys may be marching on your building. I mean, these systems are broken, and it is unclear that they offer any value. Yet we're spending billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. So there's multiple aspects to the story, and it is shocking, just shocking, that there has been so little report. I mean, this is a 40-page story for The New Yorker. This is a 40-page story for Time magazine. Yet we see nothing of it. It really is stunning. Yeah, I mean, it really is stunning. All right, folks. I mean, I guess if we were to get thousands of new members over the next couple of weeks, maybe even hundreds, I would commission someone to write this. I don't know if it would be you, Michael. Don't get so hopped up over there.
I'm very non-hopped up.
Well, that's because you've been so meditative over the past week.
I'm very meditative.
Michael is back, folks, from his Swami excursion.
It's so inaccurate.
I know, but that's all right.
That's great.
That's all right. We've moved into the part of the show where I don't have to be totally accurate. Folks, it's your memberships that support this program. A lot of people have had to cancel because of financial hardship. It is a I don't know what's going on out there, but if you have the financial ability to do so, we really do need your support. And there's thousands upon thousands of you out there who I believe must listen at least multiple times a week. Other than that, then we have a universe of people who are listening that is far greater than I could imagine. Because if people just are listening one day a week, then we have a massive, massive audience that I had never anticipated. But I'm presuming that most people listen 2 or 3 days a week. And if you do, that seems to me enough to support this program if you can. If you can't, send me an email, and if you're interested in the better half, then we can hook you up. But even if you're just interested in listening to three free shows a week, they don't have to be free for you to enjoy them. In fact, in some ways, you'll enjoy them more. So please, if you can support this program by becoming a member, please do. Of course, if you buy your Amazon junk, you can buy it through our Amazon link. Now featured on the front page of Majority.fm. Just scroll down to the bottom, click the link, bookmark it, buy your Amazon crap through that. We also have a one-off donate button. If you don't want to get involved in a monthly support of this program, go down to the bottom of the homepage at Majority.fm, ping the donate button. That helps. And JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. You get a 10% discount by using the coupon code MAJORITY. You can buy the Majority Report blend. It's delish. And you're helping out folks in Madison who are very supportive of all the anti-Scott Walker protests and are a great company, employee-owned. All right, folks, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of this program. We'll be talking about this Jonathan Karl scandal, the scandal behind the scandal of Benghazi. And Fair dug into Jonathan Karl's training as a reporter. You won't be surprised. Or maybe you will be. Also, just a quick hit on this fast track that is winding its way through the Senate. Put another plug in for this new app which allows you to know if you're supporting the Koch brothers or Monsanto when you buy products. Sweet.
It's called Bicot.
Well, now folks don't need to tune into the Better Half to find out what the name of it is.
Oh, I didn't know that's what you're doing. Mm. My bad.
Hmm. Good job.
Well, listen, I highly doubt anyone was going to be like,
all right,
I got to become a member to find out the name of this app. It's on the top.
It's just one more bonus.
It's on the top app store.
Also, I will read off the questions asked of a first grader on a pop quiz about creationism in her school, and you will cry.
And that first grader's name is, and she goes to.
No, I'm just. It's not my daughter.
I'm just being.
Oh, that's the tease.
I'm just spoiling things. That's my new thing, I guess.
All right, you can IM the show at Majority FM. See you in the better half.